Hi, welcome back. So we're going to move on. I tried to map out the next number of shiurim. I'm not sure that each of these will be its own standalone thing, but we have to talk about the topic of what is kedushin. Last week we talked about the whole topic of Tosefet Shemitah because we were exactly 1 month from Rosh Hashanah. We're not covering the topic in the most logical order, but I'm trying to attack it more or less according to how we will encounter different things as we go along, on the assumption that we're not farmers, any of us. So I want to talk today about Kedushat Shvi'it. What is this Kedushat Shvi'it that inhabits the fruits and vegetables? And then we have to talk about when you encounter these things with Kedushat Shvi'it, how does that affect the kitchen? What are the different isurim involved? What are the prohibitions involved with Kedushat Shvi'it? What are the restrictions involved with Kedushat Shvi'it? It has impact upon the running the kitchen. Now, if we were doing it in order, we would also then we would first talk about how do you buy things with Kedushat Shvi'it? Kedushat Shvi'it just literally means produce that is sanctified with the sanctity that comes about. There's no way to say this without sounding Christian. The things that grow during Shemitah have Kedusha. What kind of Kedusha we'll talk about in a moment. But there are prohibitions about how you purchase it, how you buy it, about doing schora, about trading in things with Kedushat Shvi'it. And it's not just fruits and vegetables. If you cook with chicken, doesn't have Kedushat Shvi'it because chicken isn't going to grow from the ground. Water doesn't have Kedushat Shvi'it because it doesn't grow from the ground. But chicken soup, which is, you know, probably, I don't know, 85% made of chicken and water, and you throw in a couple of vegetables, the vegetables are Kedushat Shvi'it, the whole thing becomes Kedushat Shvi'it. The whole volume of the pot becomes Kadosh with Kedushat Shvi'it, and then you have a whole big pot of chicken soup, and the whole thing has to now be treated as if it were the apple that grew from the tree. We'll get to that. So how do you buy things with Kedushat Shvi'it? These institutions that we have, the two principal institutions, obviously food that comes from abroad doesn't have Kedushat Shvi'it, and a certain amount of our fruits are imported. Things that are grown by non-Jews, things that are grown through the mechanism of the Heter Mechira, and of course this Otsar Betin, which it seems to me each and every Shemitah becomes more widespread and more popular, so much so that in the last Shemitah already, there was this initiative to get rid of the Heter Mechira in Yerushalayim, and the expansion of the Otsar Bet Din shops and how they work. We'll talk about there will be here in Efrat at least one Otsar Bet Din shop where you'll be able to acquire in a permitted way foods that have Kedushat Shvi'it, fruits and vegetables that have Kedushat Shvi'it, in a permitted way. Then towards the end of the series we'll talk about the gina, how to take care of your gina. I'll let you know you don't have to come for that one. Well, you have pots and things, right? And then finally the topic of bi'ur, which I put at the end because we'll encounter it last. Bi'ur is having to be mafkir, having to declare ownerless the food of Kedushat Shvi'it that you own according to a certain schedule of dates when those foods are no longer widely readily available in the open to everyone else, since the food of Kedushat Shvi'it is not yours, although you might possess it now for the purpose of eating, but you're not allowed to hoard it because it has to be hefker, it has to be ownerless. So there's this din of bi'ur, which we'll talk about in greater detail. There's another major topic, Shmitat Ksafim, which I think I alluded to last week, which takes place in a year and 3 weeks from now at the next Rosh Hashanah, but there's plenty of time to deal with that when we get to it, so I'm going to skip that. I'm going to skip that now. Everybody that's here was here last week?
No.
So if you're not one of the regulars in the ongoing shiur, so just jot down your email. The Kedusha of Kedushat Shvi'it is different than other kedusha that we know about. And we know about other food which is kadosh. What's an example of a food which is kadosh? Truma. Truma. If you're a Kohen, there are Kohanim here. No Kohanim here. No? Right. So you used to be a Kohen. Right. But you never ate truma. And now you're out of luck. Truma is kadosh. Bizman that we had Tumah and Tahara, and the Kohanim were Tahorim, and the owner of the field was Tahor, and his produce was Tahor. You would separate the Truma, you would separate the Maiser, you would separate the Truma's Maiser. The Maiser would go to the Levi. You don't have to be, Maiser is not Kadosh, right? It's just a financial obligation that we have to give a certain percentage to the Levi. The Levi doesn't need to be Tahor, Bizman Hazeh. If you give Maiser to a Levi, he doesn't have to be, he's allowed to eat it. And not only is he allowed to eat it, it's his property. And if he wants to share it with you, if you're not a Levi, Vakasha, he can. Because Maiser is not a din in Kedusha, but it's a more of a financial obligation, it's kind of like a tax. That's why we're permitted today to actually not give Maiser. When we do Trumos and Maiseros, when we give Trumos and Maiseros, you can give 10% to the Levi, but since Bizman Hazeh, there's no proof that anyone's a Kohen or a Levi. We take people's word for it. The Gabbai comes up to you in shul, you're new in town, they say, Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, what aliyah do you get? So you tell him, you're a Levi, what happens? You get a lot more aliyahs.
Okay.
Right? If you're a Levi, statistically, you're going to get more. I used to be, you know, we have this funny thing here in the shul. We have a Kohen who discovered, you're sitting here to my right, a Kohen who used to be a Kohen and discovered, in fact, he's a Levi. I used to be a Levi and discovered that I'm a Yisrael. And Corey Beinhacker used to be Yisrael and discovered that he's a Kohen. Musical chairs. I got the shortest end of the stick. Corey got an upgrade. And the other, he went from first class to business class. And I'm now back in coach sitting next to the bathroom with the baby was crying. Right? When I was a Levi, I used to get a lot more aliyahs. I became Yisrael. Now I'm not complaining that I got boy, right? But you get fuel. So how do we know you're a prove you're a Levi? You can't prove the Kohen's a Kohen. You can't, right? So we take you at your word. Since Lamaisa, the only thing that matters is which aliyah you get, and that's a din of what. And for a Pidyon HaBen, you need a Kohen, and we take the guy at his word. And there are a few people who hold themselves to be Kohanim Miyuchasim. They've got a pedigree, right? They've got some genealogical proof that they think they're related to somebody who we can be sure. But in fact, you know, we take our word for it. And there's a well-known story about the Vilna Gaon, who was a Bechor, that whenever he'd meet a Kohen, he would be Podeh himself. He would do Pidyon HaBen again, not with a bracha, of course, but because you figure over the course of a lifetime, you'll meet somebody who's, you know, one of these guys has got to be legit. When you get to the Bezdin Shomali, you'll find out which one it was. Kind of like hedging your bets on getting the right Kohen. So Bizman HaZeh, the Levi comes and says, give me the Maiser. So we say, Hamotzi Mechavero, Alav Haraya. You want to take my Maiser away? You want to take the mice away from me? Prove that you're a Levi. Since nobody can prove that they're a Levi, so technically you're allowed to keep the mice there. But if you want, you can give it to him. If you want, you can give it to him. No reason not to. You know, usually most of us encounter actually being mafrish trumot to maisrot. Unfortunately, very rarely. Once a year you go cherry picking in Rosh Tzurim or something. Right? That Friday, you know, people come home with like a bucket of cherries. And I usually get a few phone calls. I'm like, what do I do with that? Like, what's the hocus pocus that you have to do? We had that shiur last year, the year before, on the practical Trumos and Maestros.
The Lego.
So, with the Lego. But some people have. If you have like a shesek tree in your backyard or a plum tree in your backyard, you know, so these trees, they make like a ridiculous amount of fruit. And usually like you're trying to find neighbors that are willing to take bags of these plums or whatnot off your hand. So then you have to do trumosomyces, you have a rimonj or whatever it is. But many people don't have in their own backyard. So unfortunately, and thank God we live in a time when the hashgachot are very reputable. You know, once upon a time, people used to always take trumosomyces misafek. We don't have to do that. I mean, certainly not here. In Yerushalayim, certainly in Efrat, the mashkichim are very good. Tnuva is very good. Right? In other words, by the time the fruit gets here, it's almost impossible that it hasn't already had trumosomyces taken off, but the mashgichim take care of everything for us. So we've outsourced our mitzvot to other people. The same way, like, you know, our grandmothers or our great-grandmothers wanted to make chicken, you had to salt the chicken. Right? You had to pluck and feather the chicken. So now, who knows how to salt a chicken? Who knows how to do malicha, to take the blood out? You know, it's never... I've never done it. I've never, you know... Anybody ever do it?
Yeah.
Well, you're an old timer.
In Boston, a lot of the butchers didn't.
Yeah, but today, right. Today you'd be hard pressed to find a piece of meat that
you can't get it.
Sometimes you can find it. Yeah, sometimes you can find it. But by and large, it's hard to come by. Truma is different. Truma is actually kadosh. It has inherent sanctity. When it's been separated. Unfortunately, the Kohanim today, everybody's Tamei. The food is Tamei, and the Kohanim are Tamei, and the giver is Tamei, and we live in a world of Tumah. So since it's usur for the Kohen to eat the Truma while he's Tamei, and we have no Tohor Kohanim to give it to, so we wrap it up and we dispose of it in a respectable manner. But it's inherently Kedush. Kedushat Shvi'it is different. And there are other examples of food that's kadosh, with different levels of kedusha. Maser sheni is yours, right? 4 out of the 7 year cycle, we take maser sheni. Twice out of the 7 year cycle, in year 1, 2, 4, and 5, you take maser sheni. After you take. The truma, and after you take the maaser, and after you take the trumat maaser out of the maaser, you do another maaser called maaser sheni. It's yours. You eat it, or you transfer its worth onto a money account, and you either take that food or you take that value and you buy fruits with it in Yerushalayim, and it has to be eaten in Yerushalayim while you are tahor. In year 4 and 6, instead of Maaser Sheni, we have, what? Maaser Ani. Maaser Ani. 3 and 6. Is Maaser Ani, where you give a little extra to the Aniyim, which is a practical din. So what do you, I mean, it's a practical din that you have to do it, but it's an impractical din for the home gardener. In other words, you have a cherry tree. So you get a certain amount of cherries. So you take maaser ani, you have, I don't know, 3.5 cherries you have to give to an ani. The ani does not really want your 3.5 cherries as nice as they are. So what do you do with the cherries? Yeah. This year, I mean, this year was maaser ani. Right. So,
I mean, I know this because I've heard it from you. Oh. If you give money to an ani,
right.
You don't have to know those conditions.
Right. So you can kind of set up like a keren with your local ani. Right. You can, in advance of the year of Maaser Ani, give a certain amount of money to a poor person. They don't, as you mentioned, they don't even necessarily need to know all the details of what it is. But you keep a running cheshbon. Based upon whatever the fair market value of 3.5 cherries would be, and deduct that from, and then at the end of the year, whatever's left over in the cheshbon, you can, you know, just, you know, let them keep. But you should really kind of keep some kind of cheshbon. And,
ten percent
of what's left, and it's after you've separated the truma and the maaser. So you have all. What you have is a drop less than 90% of what you started with, but then 10% of that is for the Maiserani. Right, in other words, you have 100%. You take off, Nagid, 1% for Truma. You take off 10% for Maiser. So you're left with 89%. So 8.9% of the original. The Kedusha of Kedusha Shvius is different. Anybody can eat it. You don't need to be a Kohen. You don't need to be a Levi. You don't need to eat it in Yerushalayim. You can eat it anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. There's a problem with taking Peirot Kedushat Shvit to Chutz Laretz. This is a problem because they do export food to Chutz Laretz that has Kedushat Shvit. There's an Isser to take it outside of Eretz Yisrael, but if it has been taken outside of Eretz Yisrael, so then the people there can eat it. It doesn't become not kosher.
But you still have to observe the Kedusha.
And you still have to treat it with Kedusha Shvius. This is a problem, particularly for wine. Besides the fact that people in Chutz Laretz are a little less attuned to the problems of the dinim of schora, of buying things. There's really no way around it. Something that has Kedusha Shvius, you can't just go into... The most practical thing are wines, let's say. You cannot go into the liquor store and take a bottle of wine off the shelf and go up to the cashier and it's, I don't know, what does a bottle of wine cost in America? $15, right? And take out a 10 and a 5 and say, have a nice day. That's the Isser of Schora in Kedusha Shvius. There are other ways around it. We'll talk about it when we get to that topic. So people in America are completely unattuned to this. Even if they know, even if it says on the bottle, you know... but then there's another problem of biur. The next Erev Pesach 2016 will be the Zman HaBiur for wine. So those people that have in their wine rack Kedusha Shvius wine, if they don't know about the dinim of biur, and most people in Chutz Laretz are unattuned to these things, I don't know, maybe things are better now. Maybe the Rabbanim tell people about this. So if you don't do biur on the wine, it becomes forbidden to eat or drink it. But in principle, anybody can eat Kedusha Shvius. You can eat it wherever. You can eat it with wherever in Eretz Yisrael. If somebody's violated the prohibition of exporting it, so they can eat it. They can eat b'di'eved. Once it's there, you can eat it.
Is there a reason that wine, unlike other products, you don't find Heter Mechira or other solutions being more... even here, you don't...
Why? There's Heter Mechira in wine.
But you see a lot more... You know, if you go to a store, you'll find Heter Mechira. Kushashi wine. You don't tend to see Kushashi pickles or...
I don't know. I presume it has something to do with the market forces. It might have something to do with the hashgachot. Most wines carry a more...
It doesn't have to do with the processing.
No.
Because you could process... No. I'm saying you don't find a lot of canned goods, which have Kedusha Shvi.
Yeah,
I don't remember seeing Kedusha Shvi. Frozen, that kind of thing,
Tomato sauce? When I came here, that was my biggest problem. I couldn't buy tomato sauce.
You couldn't buy tomato sauce that...
Because, well, we came to Israel at the end of the previous Shemitah, and that was it. And it was all... Whatever.
No, so in other words, there was...
It had
Heter Mechira. Right.
But the wine... I don't remember seeing tomato sauce that says has Kedusha Shvi'it or any other product that you purchase like that. I'm like, wine, which is processed. You know, obviously, the fresh produce has a different story, but the wine always seems strange to me that was the thing that had to be more...
I don't know. I assume that there are market forces at work on why it's this way and not that way.
But Heter Mechira stuff does not
Well, it depends on how you hold on the Heter Mechira. We're going to get to that, not today, but in other words, if you hold from the Heter Mechira, and there's certainly every reason in the world to hold from the Heter Mechira from a pure halachic standpoint, it works, right? So it's not possible to say it doesn't work. You can argue that it's not a good idea. You can introduce your political views into it. You can think that it's preferable not to rely on the leniency of the heter mechira if, in fact, you view it as a leniency. There are all types of reasons to mitigate against it, but it works. And if you hold people that rely on the heter mechira, eat that stuff, and it doesn't have kedusha shvius. There's a middle position, which we'll talk about, where you rely on the heter mechira, but at least for fruits, you treat it with kedusha shvi'it. But I'll come to that when we get to it. Things that have kedusha shvi'it, there's no way to, what in Hebrew is called lehafkia, to get rid of, how would you say lehafkia? To redeem or to remove the kedusha, which is possible with other things, right? Maaser sheni. Right, this food is maaser sheni. It has to be eaten when you're tahor in Yerushalayim, right? But it's like a schlep, right? To carry all these fruits to Yerushalayim, you know, without refrigeration. I'm not going for a while. They'll rot. So then you can be podeh, the fruit. You can transfer the kedusha to money, and the money you use to buy new fruit when you get to Yerushalayim, and those fruits are now no longer kadosh. They're yatzal lechulin. That's not true. There's no mechanism to do that with peirot that are kedusha shvi'it. It has this inherent kedusha.
You have non-Jews for to buy in between them.
So in other words, if you violate the isurim, the two main isurim are what are called shamur v'ne'evad. Shamur means to guard it. Since peirot kedusha shvi'it are hefker, since they're ownerless, even though they're growing in my backyard, but they're ownerless. So I'm not allowed to keep them locked up in a way that no one else has access to them. That's the Isser of Shamur, right? Now, there's a problem, because my Gina, the only way to get into my Gina, the only way to get into your Gina, is to walk through my living room, right? So, it might be unreasonable to expect that the whole town can come walking through my living room. You could go, you have on the side, right? But you have a fence, right? It's a lo mikubal. That people should be walking normally. Lo mikubal, like walk into someone else's yard and go walking around. Right. Either to take the grapes, without taking the grapes, just to walk around, right? So you have to let people know. You put up a petek on the bulletin board that says, we have petel growing in our gina, we have rimonim growing in our gina. Kol dichvin yesev yochi. Everybody wants can come and take it. Please don't come at 3 o'clock in the morning, right? Right. We're happy to give you access between this hour and that hour. Right? It has to be some kind of reasonable thing. But if you violate the Isra of Shamur, according to most poskim, the food does not become asur. You did an Isra, but the food is. The other thing is ne'evad. If you work the land in a way that violates the prohibitions of how the land can be worked on Shemitah, you did an Isra, but the food is still kadosh b'kadosh ha'tshvit. Rav Kook suggests in the Shabbat Haaretz that you should wash netilat yadayim before you eat peirot kedushat shvi'it, just like other dinim of a kohen before he would eat truma would wash netilat yadayim. Our netilat yadayim on lechem is still somehow like reminiscent of this because of problems of tumah, right? Because if your hands are tameh, they can transfer tumah to the food under certain conditions. So this is not the halacha lemaisa. And even Rav Kook, it seems even Rav Kook thought that this was a kind of, well, I guess it depends on what you call it, I guess reflects your point of view, either a chumrah or a hidur. But maybe it was a hidur in order to kind of communicate the sanctity of this food that you're going to eat. Even the Ramban, you have it here on the daf at the top. There's a machlok, everyone agrees there's 613 mitzvot. Right? Everyone agrees there's Ramach haseh v'shasa lo taseh, 248 mitzvot haseh and 365 lo taseh, but there's no agreement on what they are or how to count them. Right? It's an interesting thing. The Gemara does not list what the 613 mitzvot are. You would think the Gemara would have done that, right? Even the Torah doesn't list precisely what. I mean, there's certain things. It's obvious. You can land from Mars and pick up the Bible and understand that sukkah is a mitzvah. But there are other things that are a little less clear. Interestingly, the Gemara tells you the math, 248 plus 365, 248 positive, 365 negative equals 613. But it doesn't give you the definitive list. And that's why the Moneh HaMitzvot, starting from the Geonim, Rav Sadia Gaon, most famously with the Rambam and the Sefer HaMitzvot, the Sefer HaChinuch more or less follows the Rambam. The Moneh HaMitzvot, the people that count up the mitzvot, do not always agree. They agree about the overwhelming majority, but they disagree about various mitzvot. And there are a number of very famous differences of opinion between the Rambam and the Ramban, Maimonides and Nachmanides. What's the most famous disagreement between them?
Probably two most famous.
Two. I would say three famous ones. But okay, one is whether or not Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah. The Rambam, Maimonides, does not count it in the list. It's just in the math, right? Maimonides does not count living in Eretz Yisrael as a mitzvah, even though we know he thought it was very important. So a lot of ink has been spilled.
It's a mitzvah.
Right, but it's not counted. So a lot of ink is spilt trying to explain like why the Rambam didn't count it amongst the 613. The Rambam thought there's one mitzvah to put on tefillin shel yad and a different mitzvah to put on tefillin shel rosh. Whereas other Rishonim thought that tefillin is one mitzvah with two different parts to it. So like Rabbeinu Shalom, Rambam, put them together, put tefillin, the two parts of tefillin together into one mitzvah, it frees up another spot, because the math always has to work out. Right? In other words, if you add a mitzvah aseh, you have to take one away, so the math works out. So put them together, you can free up a space for Yishuv Eretz. The Ramban very famously disagrees with the Rambam and says, no, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is one of the mitzvot that get counted. Right, but then because he adds that one, he has to take away something else. The other two famous ones are
tefillah,
whether daily prayer. See, that's different. They both agree. That's not exactly the example I'm talking about. They both agree that prayer is one of the mitzvot aseh, but they disagree about whether daily prayer. The Rambam believes that daily prayer is a mitzvot aseh, and the Ramban thinks that there's a mitzvot aseh to pray. When? Beit Sara, in times of distress or trouble. And perhaps the most famous machlokes between them, well, Anochi. But the Rambam, Maimonides, counts Yesod, Yesodot, Vamuda, Chachamot, Leida, Shie, Sham, Eloka, Matsui, Rishon. Belief in God is a mitzvah according to the Rambam. And the Ramban removes it from the list, although obviously the Ramban thought that you're obligated to believe in God, but he thinks that's the what do they used to call that in college? The prerequisite to mitzvot. You can't talk about mitzvot before you believe, right? You're obligated to believe, but it doesn't get counted in the list. So one of the differences of opinion, one of the things the Ramban adds here in the Hashmatot, in the list of things that he thought the Rambam left out, Mitzvah Gimel, Shamra Torah b'Perot Shvi'it, v'hayta Shabbat ha'aretz lachem lo'ochla, v'darshu la'ochla, there's a mitzvah to eat the Perot Shvi'it. The Torah says, v'hayta Shabbat ha'aretz lachem lo'ochla, that Shemitah is it's a year-long Shabbat. The land has a year-long Shabbat. Imagine the Shabbos nap. A year, you know, you and your wife could have like each have a nap and not have to argue about whose turn it is if it lasted a whole year. V'hayta Shabbat haaretz lochem le'ochla, v'darshu le'ochla. The food that grows up on the Shemitah is there for you to eat. Velo lischora, and not to trade as merchandise, not to do other things too, not to waste. We'll see in a moment. V'zed devar Torahu, and the Ramban holds that eating the Perot Shvi'it is a mitzvah, right? Like other foods, where it's a mitzvah to eat it, like most famously matzah. V'nichpala zeo ha-mitzvah ba'amru yitaleh va'achlu evyonei ha-mecha shelo amar le'evyonei ha-mecha ta'azov otam. Right, in other words, by leket shichcho peya, the parts of the field or the leftovers or the droppings in the field that you can't take, that you have to leave for the aniyim to be able to come and, right? You remember Megillat Rut, it wasn't so long ago, right? The parts of the field you leave for the aniyim to come and get. So when it's talking about the regular mitzvah of leket shikho peya, so it says ta'azov, leave those things over. The aniyim want, they come in, what do they do with it? They take it, they eat it, they sell it, they make it into a hat, they do whatever they want to do with it. But on Shemitah it says, ve'achlu evyonei amecha, that the poor people can, since all of the food in the field is hefker, so everybody has an equal hand in it, and who's most interested in having an equal hand? The poor people. And there it's for them to eat. So the Ramban makes this diuk, you know, both on the word of Shabbat Ha'aretz le'ochla, and also about the verb that's used in terms of what the poor people do all year long, all 6 years of the cycle, peya shikha, leket shikha peya. It's there. It's my obligation to leave it. But descriptively, the Torah says, in terms of Shemitah, it's there for the evyonim, for the poor people, to eat. So the Ramban says, you see, there's a mitzvah to eat the peirot of Shemitah. We don't paskin this way, right? I mean, the other Rishonim disagree. I mean, it doesn't matter. We eat the peirot Shemitah anyway. So you can think, like, according to the Ramban, I'm doing a mitzvah. Right? But things that have this Kedusha are holy. I'll skip the Megillat Esther, which is a commentary on the Ramban. Megillat Esther is a 16th century Italian achron who wrote a commentary on the Ramban's commentary on the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot. So he says something here, which, you know, you can read. What gets Kedusha Shvi'it? What are the foods that become kadosh? So there's a Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. I'm sorry, I didn't put on the daf, but you know the Mishnah, Arba Rosh Hashanah Hem, and Echad B'Tishrei. You know, for different purposes, there are different parts of the year that we consider the beginning of the count. It's a strange thing, you know, like the kids always get confused in school because Tishrei is not the first month. Nisan is the first month. Anybody that grew up, you know, using the what we call the English calendar, but it's no more English than it is French, right? Using the Gregorian calendar. So it makes sense that the first day of the first month of the first of every year is January 1st. January is the first month. That's when we change the calendar over. It goes from being 2014 to 2015. It's confusing that Echad B'Nisan is the first month, Iyar is the second month, but Tishrei begins the new year. And there, so we're used to this idea that there's Tu B'Shvat for certain purposes, and Echad B'Tishrei is the Rosh Hashanah, not just for Tshuva and the Gzar Din and all those things that we're going to be getting into the mood for, but for Shemitah. So obviously anything that grew in the sixth year, we're now in the sixth year, even if I eat it during Shemitah, asterisk in the conversation here, there are exceptions to this rule, but anything that grew in the sixth year, even if I eat it in the seventh year, is obviously not kadosh. Not everything I put into my mouth from this Rosh Hashanah to next Rosh Hashanah has kedusha shvi'is. And some things will last, have a, as they say in marketing, a long tail into the beginning of the first year. So it has to do with the, in other words, it has to do with the things that grow in the year of Shemitah. But what's the operative word in that sentence? Grow. How do you define growth? Or what really should be defined as the ikar, the essential growth, the moment in the process, in the growth process of the vegetable, of the fruit, of the wheat, of the whatnot, where you say, oh, that's it. And if that moment took place during the Shemitah year, it's kadosh. And if it took place before the Shemitah year, it's not kadosh. So you won't be surprised that the halacha had something to say about this, had an opinion about what that moment is. And you also won't be surprised that it's... What? Obviously, there's going to be machlokas about certain things, but that it depends on what kind of produce we're talking about. Not all produce is the same. Fruits and vegetables and wheat and everything has its own thing. Because Chazal understood botanologically, botanically? What's the difference between botanologically and botanically?
I imagine botanologically is like the study of
botanics. Botanologically is the study of botanics. So botanically speaking, everything is different, and we look at it in different ways. So for kidneyot, you know about kidneyot. Ah, you thought you got out of kidneyot, but they're back. Because kidneyot also apply in Shemitah. Kidneyot, legumes, beans, etc., I presume that this includes corn for the purposes of Shemitah. Is there corn grown in Israel?
Yeah.
Yeah, look out the train to take Shemesh.
I never take the train, but I'll take your word for it. So corn.
Mala Gilboa,
they grow corn?
5 years ago grew that corn.
Oh, okay. I presume, I'm not certain, we'll have to look it up, I presume that corn is kidneyot for these purposes as well. Kidneyot, olives, tvuah, wheat. We do grow some wheat here, although most of it is used for animal consumption.
And a lot of the corn, too.
A lot of the corn is also used for animal consumption. And grapes. Zeitim anavim, olives, grapes, wheat, and kidneyot. When they reach what's called in halacha, havo'ot shlish, when they reach one-third of their growth, which is an important halachic concept in all of Zra'im, in all of agricultural law, that when they reach one-third of their growth, that's the moment when we say, oh. If they reach one-third of their growth before Shemitah, so then they're not Kadosh B'Kadosh Shvi'it. Rimonim. We have a rimon tree. It doesn't make the most tasty rimonim. But most of the rimonim, some of them are already ripe, but most of them have reached Havo'et Shlish a while ago. Even though we're not going to start picking them yet, they haven't started, you know, you always have this problem, they start falling off the tree and then the garden is full of like rotting rimonim. They haven't started doing that yet. Very few are yet ripe. And we'll start picking them right before Rosh Hashanah. We'll pick a couple to have on Rosh Hashanah, but we'll start picking them after Rosh Hashanah. But the rimonim that we'll pick on Sukkot, already a month into Shemitah, it's a couple weeks into Shemitah, won't be kadosh. Why? Because they reached that stage of Havo'ot Shlish during the sixth year. Even though they're still going to be on the tree well into the Shemitah year. Well into the Shemitah year. Olives. We have an olive tree also. They've all reached Havo'ot Shlish. Even if we won't pick them until later in the fall, they won't have... But next year, Rosh Hashanah will come and go. Shemitah will have come and gone. The olives that I'll pick next fall, which reached Havo'ot Shlish during the Shemitah year, even though when I'm picking them, it's after Shemitah has come and gone, they'll still have Kedushat Shvi'it. I'll press them into olive oil. Not that I've ever done that. How many olives you need to have in order to get olive oil?
A lot.
I'll press them into olive oil, and then I'll use that olive oil to...
Light your chametz.
No. Well, that's a problem. But I'll use that olive oil to fry an egg. The egg has kedusha shvius. Eggs don't grow from the ground. No. But it was fried in the olive oil that has the kedusha shvius months, years after Shemitah came and went. Vegetables, on the other hand, cucumbers, tomatoes, It doesn't matter when they reach their maximum growth. It doesn't matter when they became ripe. It matters when they're picked. I have tomatoes on the vine. They're ripe and ready on Erev Rosh Hashanah. No Kedusha. I have to take Trumas and Maestros, of course. Rosh Hashanah comes and goes. That same tomato, I could have picked it on Erev Rosh Hashanah. I could have picked it a minute before candle lighting. Right? Instead, I pick a minute after Havdalah on Motzei Rosh Hashanah, on Tzom Gedalia, Kedusha Shvius. Because for vegetables, it depends on the ktifa, when you pick it. When you pick it. Which is why Rosh Hashanah will come in a few weeks. It'll be a long time before the fruits in the store will be Kedusha Shvius. You'll be able to buy fruits and vegetables for quite a while. Fruits for quite a while. The day after Rosh Hashanah, you can still go and buy the vegetables. Because they were there from before. But within a couple days, within 2-3 days, the fruits and vegetables, the vegetables will already be Kedusha Shvius. Now, when does this happen? So it depends. Each fruit and each vegetable is different. And you have to get the luach. I mentioned the luach, right? So they always print these luchot. You can get them. They'll have them in all the stores. They'll have these things. But they're also online. There's a very good website. It's the website of the Machon, Machon HaTorah V'Haaretz, which is kind of like the center for all the mitzvah Ratzuya Ba'aretz. Their website is called Torah Land, TORALAND, Torah Land without an H on the Torah, toraland.org.il, toraland.org.il. On that website, you'll see at the top, there's a tab for Shemitah. And on the Shemitah page, they have the luchot for fruits, for vegetables. You can search. It's much more mishuchlal than it was the last Shemitah.
As a consumer, that's more important, or should you just rely on, assuming the store needs to let you know?
So it depends on where you're shopping. Here in Efrat, as I recall from the last Shemitah, and I only assume it'll get even better, here in Efrat, in the Dati neighborhoods in Yerushalayim, so everything is usually well labeled. Right, there'll be three bins of tomatoes, and one will say Kedushat Shvit, and one will say Heter Mechira, and one will say Yuvul Nachri or Perut Chul. They brought it from Jordan or from wherever, right? And it's very well labeled. And Baruch Hashem, our Mashgichim, Eliza Hachsted is there, keeping her eyes on everyone.
She's
not retired. They stopped paying her, but you think she's going to stop working, right? There are people here that are worried to make sure everybody gets to do mitzvos. So everything is well labeled. That's not true every place in the world, every place in the country. But here it's pretty good. But you might just want to know, you might want to know what's what. So you can go and it'll tell you. It says Kedusha Shvi here. It says avocado. Avocado. So the Kedusha will start at the beginning of December of this coming December. And it will go until Sof Yuni Shminit, right, in the market until June of 2016, a year following, right? And then it'll also tell you what's the Zman HaBiur for each thing. Again, we're going to get back to Biur. And a lot of times it'll tell you that something has no Kedushat Shviit. I'm just looking off this list. Walnuts have no Kedushat. Why don't walnuts have Kedushat Shviit? Because they're not grown here. Mm. Right? I mean, it could be.
The ones that are. And when we first moved to, we rented a house that had two huge walnut trees.
So
I
those were, right?
About a kilo.
Yeah. Right? But on the market,
okay.
Right, there's no such thing. Uchmaniyot, there's no blueberries grown here. Right? So they sell them, they're very expensive. But they're not. So if they are blueberries that are grown here, they're grown on the matzah minutak. Yeah. On the.
Growing them in
what do you call that? Hydroponics. By the way, this was unfortunately among the things that were destroyed with the Gush Katif, was this big industry of hydroponics, the Gush Katif lettuce and all those other things, which, you know, are done for various reasons, because you want to grow things in areas where the climate or the land don't support it, or you want to avoid the bug problem, or you want to avoid the complications of mitzvot to ba'aretz. They're complications in the sense that it might interfere with your parnasa. You want to continue 7 out of 7 years to grow things. So they grow them hydroponically. It's not connected to the land. It's done in a way where these things are not gidulei karka, and therefore Shemitah doesn't apply to them. So if there are blueberries that are grown here, they're grown hydroponically. So anyway, you can look on the lists, and you can look everything up. There are tabs and everything else. And you can know when everything is what. Yeah, it's everything. It's downloadable. It's you can get it to your phone. You can get a book. You can whatever you want. Fruit, regular fruit, aside from zeitim and anavim, regular fruit goes after what's called chanata. Chanata is a word that's hard to translate, but it means the stage at which the tree bears fruit. You know how this works. You have a tree. It makes a flower. The flower, under the flower, something grows. So it depends on the tree. Sometimes the little bulb underneath starts to grow. Rimonim are perfect examples of this. They're the best examples of it, because the little rimon is there. It like, you know how the rimon looks? You know, it has this little, it looks like a Magen David. Right, it has those little star things that open up. There's the flower, the red flower. The flower, when the flower falls off, that little bud or bulb underneath starts to grow into the fruit. Chanata is that stage where the fruit begins to form. When that happens, that's when peirot become kadosh with kedushat shvi'it. If that happens before now in the sixth year. So even if it gets picked and eaten on the seventh year, it's not kadosh, but it will be at the end and following into the eighth year. Earlier I mentioned the havot shlish of the rimonim. That was imprecise. I should have said the chanata of the rimonim.
You're talking about fruit from fruit trees.
Fruit trees.
Fruit, non-tree fruit, like berries or whatever, they're considered like vegetables?
So berries, I think, are considered like, well, altogether, berries are... like raspberries, it's a machlokus about what kind of thing that is.
Strawberries, or
so? No, strawberries are certainly like yirakot, because they grow on the ground. Right. They don't grow on trees. Raspberries and blackberries.
That's a general question, though.
So that's a machlokus. Raspberries and blackberries are machlokus. It's also a machlokus if they have orla. It's advisable not to. You know, orla is hard to come by because most fruit trees don't produce fruit in the first 3 years. But that's not true about raspberry. Like, raspberries are fairly easy to grow. You take one stalk, you stick it in the ground. So it's a machlokus whether they have orla, so you have to be machmir. There's a machlokus about the bracha, so you say brei pri adama, since that covers brei pri eitz in a suffix. But in terms of Shemitah, I'm not sure. You have to look up the pet. I don't remember from last time. You have to look it up.
Melons would also be...
Melons are... Yeah, melons grow on the ground. Yeah. So chanata, but what is chanata? So Rashi says, look at the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah here, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Daled, which gives these criteria for everything. So Rashi on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, lokach halchu be'ilan acher chanata. Kedushat Shvi'it begins with perot ha'etz. By this stage of chanata, shekol gedilat perotav al yedei shehalat saraf ha'ilan lifnei chanatahu. The way it works is that after the flower flowers, or as the flower is flowering, the sap, you know, which is like the blood of the life of the tree, which gives the energy. The sap is like sugar. Remember when you were a kid and you tapped maple trees to make maple syrup?
All the time.
Etymologically,
syrup comes from saraf, says our lexicographer. Syrup. You don't have maple syrup in Chicago?
Yeah, supermarket.
We used to go in school. You didn't do this. We used to go to the maple tree. We used to tap the maple tree, put out the little pail. You know, look at me like I'm crazy.
Maybe an East Coast thing.
Might be an East Coast thing. Who's from Boston? You're from Boston.
Yeah, yeah.
right? So you're from Boston. So you used to do this, right?
Okay. You used to do it?
We used to do it in New Jersey, yeah. So,
not like every morning.
It was like something you do in school. It was like a so, but what's the sap? What's the syrup? It's all sugar, and it gives the tree the energy because it needs a tremendous amount of growth to produce the fruit. What is fruit? Why is fruit sweet?
Sugar.
Because it has a tremendous amount of fructose. It has a tremendous amount of this sugar in it. So the tree starts producing this sap. That's why when you need to prune a tree, like right now we have a problem. We were lazy. One of our trees was damaged in the storm in the winter, and we should have pruned it and taken care of it, but we didn't. And now it's coming up on Shemitah, so we have to do it before the Shemitah. But now is the wrong time to do it because now the tree is growing, and now is that you want to prune your trees when they're dormant, right? The trees go to sleep after they're done producing the fruit for the season. That's why the leaves fall off. That's why they don't grow in the winter, right? And in the spring, they wake up again, right? And the blood, the saraf, the syrup, starts flowing again up the tree into what becomes the fruit. So Rashi says that's what happens. It's amazing. Can you imagine? Like Rashi knew these things, right? So that, Rashi says that's what happens. The ikar gedila. The main growth comes as the flower is about to fall off and the sap is moving up the tree into to produce the fruit. And that's why the chanata, that moment where the fruit is formed after the flowers fall off, that's the line of demarcation. That's where we, you know, put our kind of the pin into the calendar and say, oh, This is the moment that it's become what it needs to be. Ah, and then you look, is it Shemitah or is it not Shemitah? If it's at the end of the sixth year, so it doesn't have Kedusha, even though you're only going to eat it and pick it and eat it in the seventh year, and vice versa. There's a machlokas. The Rambam says that Chanata is when it becomes more fully formed, I'm sorry, I didn't put that on the page. I meant to put that on the page. A little bit later, and the halacha is the Shulchan Aruch goes like the Rambam, that the chanata is a slightly later stage, when the bud becomes more fully formed. It's for halacha lamaisa, for practical purposes, it's less significant that you understand the batani behind all these things because we have the luchot. The luchot just tells you. Now, it's not each, we don't need to know about each and every single fruit, you know, because you look at the tree, not all the fruit reaches the stage at the same time. Right? But we look at rimon trees, and we say that this is the date, this is the point where the rimon, and those of you that remember the Gemara that we learned in Psachim a few weeks ago, right? That there are different regions, there are different the fruit in the Golan ripens at a different stage or a different time than the fruit in Yehuda where we live, because we have different climates, etc. Flowers. Oh, we're running out of time here. Flowers. Flowers in theory have Kedusha Shvius. It's a machlokas. Generally, we say that flowers that give smell, you know, not all flowers, like carnations don't have smell, but that flowers that have smell have Kedushat Shvit and have to be grown. You can buy flowers with Hashgacha during Shemitah. Maybe we'll come back to that topic a little later. Edible flowers have Kedushat Shvit, you know, like any other eatable product. And just to introduce the next topic, hefseid, food that has kedusha, le'ochla, has to be eaten, and it can't be wasted. Beyond the general value of of Bal Tashchis, that you shouldn't waste food, which is not something that we treat as a absolute value. But you're not allowed to, you're not allowed, the food is to be eaten. And if it's not eaten, it has to be disposed of in a proper way. That is a question that relates to how you manage your kitchen. Because, you know, sometimes there are leftovers. In my house, serving leftovers is viewed as like some kind of like torture. It makes us bad parents. You know, and at the end of the week, usually this leftover food that ends up getting thrown out. This becomes a complication in Shemitah because it's lo ochla v'lo lehefsed. And we'll have to talk about how we manage that when we meet again next week.